Are there any questions?
What about this ghost nun?
Mario says. Ruprecht poo-poos the notion.
There is no ghost nun. That's just some silly story they tell to make the girls behave.
Oh,
Mario says, not looking entirely convinced. The time of the strike has been set for 1900 hours, when the residents of St. Bridget's, staff and students alike, will be in the dining hall. With 20 minutes to go, everything is in place. The pod lies on the floor in a tennis bag, attending its hour. Jeff pours over the instructions for the cosmic energy compressor. Victor Hero has been primed to sign the team in at study hall. Ruprecht paces about, working on his speech for the camera.
History books have been written in pencil. Though we be young, scorn us not.
Awestruck look.
Can it be so? Are we the lucky ones for whom God has left the door on the latch?
With growing sense of rapture.
Into what lambent destiny have we taken the first step?
And though none says it, this same lambent destiny seems already to invest the room, to fizz at their pores, as if the mound, anticipating their arrival, has sent its emissaries to hurry them on, or rather, sent her emissaries. Earlier that evening, seeking to fill the nervous interim as much as for extra information, Jeff had returned to the Druid's website and found tucked away there a poem by Robert Graves on the subject of the white goddess who ruled the other world. If strange things happen where she is, so that men say that graves open and the dead walk, or that futurity becomes a womb and the unborn are shed, such portents are not to be wondered at, being tourbillons in time, made by the strong pulling of her bladed mind through that ever-reluctant element. None of them quite knew what it meant.
What's a tourbillion?
And Ruprecht said it had no immediate relevance to the task at hand. But ever since then, each of them finds himself with a vivid mental impression of the goddess herself, imprisoned by floorboards and masonry and centuries of coercive unbelief, somewhere underneath their sister school, and experiences this curiously externalized impatience, as of something tugging at their sleeves. Then, with 5 minutes to 0 hour, there is a groan from the doorway. They turn to see Dennis propped wretchedly against the jamb.
I don't know what it is,
he croaked.
A minute ago I was fine, then suddenly I started feeling really bad.
What do you mean, bad?
I don't know. Kind of tingly? And energized? It's totally inexplicable.
Holy smoke!
Jeff, looking round wildly to the others.
It must be his radiation sickness returning.
No, no.
Dennis dismisses this.
Although, now that you mention it, the symptoms are completely identical.
Will you be able to do the mission?
Ruprecht wants to know.
Oh, yes, absolutely,
Dennis says, and then collapses.
What are we going to do?
Jeff says after they have carried him over to the bed.
We have to get the nurse,
Niles says.
No nurse,
Ruprecht replies tersely.
Nurses ask questions.
But Ruprecht, he's sick!
We can't jeopardize the mission. Not now.
Maybe you could go instead of him.
Jeff proposes to Niall.
I have a piano lesson.
Niall mumbles sheepishly.
What about you, Victor?
No way,
Victor says.
I'm not getting expelled.
It looks like we'll have to put it off till another night,
Mario says to Ruprecht.
We can't put it off till another night,
Ruprecht replies through gritted teeth.
Tonight's the end of the Cygnus X-3's radiation burst. It has to be tonight.
But a condor can't fly on one wing. Everyone knows that. The operation is in serious trouble, and it must be said that the team commander's reaction to the crisis leaves something to be desired. Stamping about the room like a giant, bellicose toddler, kicking the waste paper basket, slippers, anything else that crosses his path, while the rest of the team bow their heads plaintively, something in the manner of humble banana farmers in the midst of a tropical storm. And then fate intervenes, in the form of Mario's roommate, Odysseus Antopopopoulos, arriving at the door looking to borrow some antifungal cream. 5 machinating pairs of eyes fix on him.
Well, I don't know if it's a fungus.
Odysseus says.
It might be a reaction to rayon.
The situation is explained to him in double quick time. It isn't clear, at the end of it, whether Odysseus has any real idea what he's getting himself into. But after months of listening to Mario's fantasies on the subject, he is keen to see the interior of St. Bridget's for himself. The condor is aloft again. Odysseus, furthermore, has a whole wardrobe of black fencing gear, custom-made for covert operations, which he invites the team to make use of. As the hour strikes on the school clock, with Jeff's broke gun on ahead to buttonhole the security guard, the three others jostle at the door, synchronizing their phones, resembling, in their dusky regalia, not so much condors as fugitive punctuation marks. Two brackets and one overfed full stop.
So long, Victor.
So long, Niall.
We'll send you a postcard from the next dimension. With that, they run out the door and down the stairs and into history. 5 minutes later, as Skippy is sitting down to eat with Laurie's family, they are straddled on the partition wall. From somewhere in the darkness beyond, the theme to Bunnington Village may be heard, as Jeff thrashes through dock leaves with the St. Bridget's gatekeeper. Directly below, staring up intently and wagging its stumpy tail in a decidedly foreboding manner, is a small brown and white beagle.
Maybe it just wants to play,
Odysseus suggests.
Ha!
Mario says. The dog's eyes gleam at them through the darkness. Its long tongue palpitates over smiling rows of teeth.
In a glade, in a forest.
Jeff Sproke's voice wafts over faintly.
Where there's magic in the air.
A cold, rain-laced wind plays over their cheeks.
This is some plan.
Mario says sarcastically to Ruprecht's ignominious silence.
Oh yes, clearly the work of a mastermind.
It appears that at some point during the lead-in to the mission, Operation Condor's team commander and scientific director ate the biscuits intended for the neutralization of Nipper.
Here comes William Bunnington,
sings Jeff anxiously.
With his friend Owl, he's the mayor.
Dog biscuits. You draw up this big, complicated plan with the bells and the whistles, and then before we even leave, you eat the dog biscuits?
Couldn't help it,
Ruprecht replies miserably.
When I'm nervous, I get hungry.
They were dog biscuits!
Well, we can't stay up here forever,
Odysseus says.
I'm not going down there to get my family jewels chewed off,
Mario states, then scratches his ear.
This damn rayon, it's making me itchy.
Bunnington Village,
Jeff, with mounting urgency.
Where the squirrels make nut soup.
Lad, why in God's name do you keep making that infernal racket?
Comes the rough voice of Brody the janitor.
It helps me concentrate,
they hear Jeff reply.
When I'm looking for things?
Are you sure your ball even came in here?
I think so,
Jeff says. Below, the dog flexes itself in a settling-in sort of way.
Maybe we should just abort the mission,
Mario says.
Never,
comes the defiant reply from his left.
Well, what are we going to do, just stay up here all night?
Ruprecht does not answer.
Isn't that a football right there?
They hear the guard say.
Where?
Jeff's voice says.
There, right there, you're looking right at it.
Oh, yes. I'm not sure that's my football.
Well, it'll do ya.
A bunny place! A funny place!
Desperately.
Ah, for Jesus' sake!
An always bright and sunny place! Bunnington will keep a space for you!
Stop it! Go home now! I don't want to see you in here again.
The guard starts clapping his hands and calling the dog. The dog, without taking its eye off the top of the wall, barks.
Hold on. Sounds like Nipper's found something.
Wait!
Jeff implores.
I have to tell you something. Something of the utmost importance.
Well, Comandante?
Mario inquires acidly.
May we please go home now?
But before Ruprecht can reply, Odysseus has peeled off his black sweater, leapt off the wall into the yard, and thrown it over the dog.
Quickly!
He urges the other two. as the sweater charges blindly left and right, emitting muffled barks of ever-growing anger. Mario and Ruprecht land painfully on the wet asphalt, just as the dog's vengeful snout pokes into view.
Go!
Odysseus exhorts, stepping protectively before them, and they take to their heels and run to the shadow of the school. Snarls and the sound of tearing fabric echo across the empty yard. But there is no time to wonder or grieve, nor is there any way back. The guard's feet thump over the ground, his torch beam flashing in every direction. Without stopping to think, they scurry around to the back of the school and up the rickety metal staircase, wrestling open the window sash and hurling themselves through it. It's only as they pick themselves up from the moth-eaten carpet that they realize where they are. Inside St. Bridget's. Inside the grey walls that have stared back at them for so long, teasing them with the mysteries they conceal. Not yet ready to speak or move, every breath seeming like a 1,000-decibel explosion, the boys roll their eyes at each other in mute incredulity. One aspect of the plan has panned out. There doesn't seem to be anybody around. Silently, warily, Ruprecht and Mario tread away from the window, leaving the dark crenellations of Seabrook behind. The deserted hallway is both alien and familiar, like the landscape of a dream. There is a chipped dado rail and a picture of Jesus, dewy-eyed and rosy-cheeked, as a boy band singer. Passing into the girls' dorms, they see through the open doors rumpled bedcovers, balled-up foolscap, posters of footballers and pop stars, homework timetables, bottles of spot cream, uncannily like the dorms in Seabrook, except in some unplaceable and totally fundamental way, completely different. As they descend the stairs to negotiate the ground floor, this creepy schizoid feeling only grows. Everywhere they look, there are analogues of their own school. Classrooms with cramped benches and scrawled blackboards. Printouts on the notice boards. Trophy rooms and art room posters. Almost identical, but at the same time, somehow not. The discrepancy too subtle for the naked eye, and yet omnipresent. As though they've entered a parallel universe, before the portal has been opened at all, where instead of atoms, everything is composed of some mysterious other entity, quarks of hitherto unseen colours. It is quite different from how Mario imagined breaking into a girls' school would be, and the idea that this place has been here, existing, the whole time he's been around, is one that he finds deeply unsettling. If Ruprecht is struck by this, he shows no sign. He treks on wordlessly, 5 or 6 steps in front of Mario, the pod clinking gently in the bag slung over his shoulder. Then, up ahead, they hear footsteps, and Ruprecht yanks Mario into an unoccupied classroom, just as 2 grey-frocked nuns round the corner. In the very back row, they crouch beneath the desks, bathed with sweat. Mario's breathing, heavy and rushed.
"You're making too much noise,"
Ruprecht hisses at him.
"I can't help it,"
Mario gesticulates.
"These nuns, they give me the willies."
The nuns have stopped right outside the door. They are talking about a Brazilian priest who is visiting in spring. One nun suggests they take him to Knock. The other says Balanspittle. A polite argument ensues over the competing merits of the materializations of Our Lady in these 2 places, one being more accredited, the other more recent, and then...
"Did you hear something?"
Under his desk, Mario gazes in horror at his phone, which has just released 2 loud, self-satisfied bleeps, and now emits 2 more. Hysterically, Mario fusses over the buttons, trying to shut it up.
"Could it be mice?"
One nun wonders from the corridor.
"Funny sort of mice,"
the other says, her tone hardening.
"Coronation Street starting.
I'll just have a peep."
The light comes on. The nuns' eyes scan the bare surfaces of the desks. The boys hold their breath, clench every muscle. painfully aware of the fog of sweat and hormones and odors that pump from every pore, waiting for a nostril to twitch in recognition.